In the old American westerns on television, when marshals were chasing a fugitive, they would display posters in neighboring towns and villages with a picture of the outlaw, like this, that's me, and the words, "Wanted dead or alive." They didn't care whether bounty hunters brought in the renegade living and breathing or not. In the same way, St. Paul, kind of a weird way, says the same thing about himself. In his letter to the Philippians, he writes, "I am caught between the two. I long to depart this life and be with Christ, for that is far better. Yet that I remain in the flesh is more beneficial for you." It's more beneficial for you. So Paul didn't really care whether he lived or died, whether he was alive or dead. It was all up to God. Most of us, however, aren't so indifferent, are we? We want to be alive. We don't want to be dead. I hear Catholics say all the time, you know, when I ask them how you're doing, they say, "Oh, yeah, it's a good day. I'm above ground. You know, I'm breathing." Despite our faith, we fear death. We still worry about what happens after this life. And we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to think about it. And yet, the question of what happens after we die is one that is put into our hearts by God. And so you and I know intuitively that there is more. There is more after this life. Death is not the end. And so we decided to do a whole series dedicated to death. And now we're in week two of that series, which we're calling "You're Dead, So Now What?" So what does happen after you die? And who really knows? Well, as we said last week, if you grew up Catholic, you probably remember that there are pretty much three destinations where you could end up after you die: heaven, purgatory, or hell. And last week, we talked about hell and purgatory. We said that hell is wherever God is not. Hell is the absence of God's love and mercy. Wherever God is not at, that's where hell is. It could be in this life or it could be in the next. We also said that hell is not something that God sends people to. Rather, hell is our eternal resolution not to be with God. Pope St. John Paul II put it this way. It's kind of a long quote, but it's worth reading. He says, "God is the infinitely good and merciful Father, but man, human beings, can unfortunately choose to reject the love and forgiveness, his love and forgiveness, once and for all, thus separating himself forever from joyful communion with God." And here's the punchline. Eternal damnation or hell is not a punishment imposed externally by God, but a development of premises already set by people in this life. What he's saying is that hell is not something, it's not God's decision. It's ours. We are the ones who choose hell when we close ourselves off to God's love and mercy. In his book, The Problem of Pain, the Christian author C.S. Lewis wrote that the doors to hell are actually locked from the inside. From the inside. The second possible destination is purgatory. And as we said last week, purgatory is not sort of a plan B for people who aren't quite good enough to get into heaven, but not quite bad enough to deserve hell. Purgatory is a place of preparation to get ready for heaven. It's for people who have said yes to God's grace, but at the end of their lives aren't quite ready to meet him and spend eternity with him face to face. It could be that due to the character and quality of our lives, we may simply be unprepared. We simply may be unprepared to appreciate eternal life. We may be unprepared to even desire heaven. And that's not a great thing. But God gives us that chance after we die. It's a merciful, merciful, and beautiful doctrine that I personally love. I'm shooting for purgatory. I'm betting on it. I kind of think of purgatory as getting stuck in traffic on the way to a wonderful Christmas dinner. You can't wait to get there. You know you're going to get there eventually, but in the meantime, you're kind of stuck. And while you're stuck, you get this opportunity to kind of think about your life, to review it, to reflect on it, and to purify your mind and heart and get ready for that great feast in heaven with God, that great celebration that will last for all eternity. And the good thing is, as Catholics, we believe that we can pray to help clear up that traffic jam that our loved ones may be stuck in. Through our prayers, we can support our deceased loved ones and everyone who's in purgatory on their final journey to heaven. Well, the third possible destination is heaven. I think that's the one we all want to achieve, right? Someday we all want to be in heaven. And that's what I want to talk with you about tonight. Heaven is a place of perfection and eternal bliss. In heaven, we will see God face to face. Now, you may wonder, what happens in heaven? Well, the Bible contains images of what people do in heaven. And guess what? They're doing what we're doing right now. They're worshiping God and Jesus, except they're doing it face to face. And when you think about it, Mass is like a foretaste of heaven. Mass is like a little appetizer to get you ready for heaven, where we will offer God pure worship all the time. That's what heaven will be like. But what about beyond that? What will heaven be like other than that great worship experience? Well, no one really knows. But we do have some interesting information from thousands and thousands and thousands of what are called near-death experiences. These are people who have been declared clinically dead and then later revived. And when they come back, they describe images of heaven. And these stories are remarkably similar. They usually include a bright white light, friends and loved ones or other people welcoming them into heaven, and an incredible sense of peace. Pastor John Burke just wrote a book called Imagine Heaven, where he dissects about over 1,000 of these near-death experiences. And a number of parishioners have gone to a new movie that was just released by Angel Studios called After Death. It's still playing at Northgate if you want to try to catch it. I have not been able to see it, but I've been told it's a beautiful movie about near-death experiences. But I actually have a friend, a very close personal friend, who had a near-death experience. About this time last year, he was surfing in Orange County where he lived. He was a master surfer. He'd been doing it all his life. But on this particular occasion, he went out surfing, and he suffered a sudden cardiac arrest, fell off the surfboard, and drowned. The other surfers rescued him, pulled him to shore, gave him CPR. He was resuscitated, but he was in a deep coma. Later, he told me what he experienced while he was in that coma. He said he was like in this dark room, and it looked like a waiting room of some sort. He said there was a young woman there in her mid-20s and a young man about the same age, both of whom were consoling him, telling him, "It's going to be okay. Don't worry, David." David is my friend's name. "Don't worry, David. It's going to be okay." And then the young man excused himself because he had to go help other people, I guess other people who had just died. Well, eventually, my friend David saw a bright white light in one of the upper corners of the room, and he said he felt this incredible peace that he had never, ever experienced before. And he started walking towards the light, and then he heard this voice, and he attributed the voice to God. And the voice said, "David, you can go to heaven right now if you would like. But first consider what you're leaving behind." And when the voice said that, David had a vision of his wife, Kimberly, as a young widow. David was not much older than I am. I consider myself young. But he had this, still, he had this vision of his young widow, of his wife, Kimberly, who would be left as a young widow. And he could see that she was broken-hearted. And he also saw his son, Josh, at his wedding day. And all the friends and family were gathered around. And they were sad that David wasn't there. And then he saw his daughter, Taylor, walking down the aisle at her wedding. And David wasn't there. She was walking down the aisle alone. And when he saw all this, David said to God, "I'm not ready." And soon after that, he woke up from the coma. These are beautiful, consoling, true stories that give us a glimpse into the afterlife, the kind of peace and joy that we will experience in that time in the afterlife. And there's just too many of these stories and too many similarities to discount them or to deny their reality. So that may be kind of what heaven is like. But the ultimate question, the million-dollar question is, how do you get into heaven, right? And the answer is, you can't. You cannot get into heaven on your own. On your own. Left to our own devices, we have no hope for heaven. That's the bad news. The good news is that we're not left on our own. We have Jesus. And by Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, he has opened heaven to us. This is why Paul says in the second reading today, he says, if we believe that Jesus died and rose, then so will God with Jesus bring with him all those who have fallen asleep in death. Now, that's not to say that people of other religions can't get into heaven. The church is very clear on this, that there is the possibility of that. But the surest way is faith in Jesus. And I emphasize the word faith because sometimes we Catholics, we've kind of grown up in this culture that tells us we have to do all this good work. We have to earn our way into heaven. We're not going to get into heaven unless we do all the good things and all the right things. And we make one bad mistake and boy, that's it. Right? We kind of grew up in that culture, but it's not true. And it's really not the theology of the church. It's a misexplained theology of the church. The good things you do, the good deeds you do, the taking care of your family and taking care of your neighbors and giving to the poor and so on and so on, those are all good and wonderful things, but they are not going to add up automatically to an admission ticket to heaven. Rather, what they do is strengthen your character. And it's your character that you take with you to heaven. In fact, it's the only thing you can take with you into heaven. And I think that's kind of what Jesus was getting at in this gospel passage today. Let me break it down a little bit for you. He starts the parable, he says that the kingdom of heaven is like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. What's he talking about? That's sort of abrupt. Well, you have to know the historical context. Back in those days, when Jesus lived, weddings happened after dark, or they started after dark. When the sun had set, the groom would leave his house, go to the bride's house, pick her up, and then escort her back to the home where they would be living as man and wife. It was like a procession through the streets, and there were tons of people there, and they were singing, and they were dancing, and the neighbors would come out and kind of gawk and rubberneck and offer the young couple, you know, good wishes and blessings. But the procession was led by young unmarried women, virgins, young unmarried women carrying torches to light the way because it was dark outside. So that's what Jesus is talking about. And in this parable, we can assume that Jesus is the bridegroom. We are the bride, and the wedding is between heaven and earth. And the wedding banquet is heaven itself. That's the ultimate wedding banquet. But look at what Jesus says next about the character of these young women. He says that five of them were wise, or foolish, and the others were, the other five were wise. He was talking about their character. Five were foolish in character, five were wise in character. Why? Well, the evidence is in the story. The five wise young women thought to bring oil for the lanterns, like extra oil in case they ran out, and they had the oil to bring. The foolish young women didn't think about that, didn't think about bringing extra oil. So they all fall asleep, right? They all fall asleep waiting for the bridegroom. He's a little late. You know, weddings always start late. Usually it's the bride, but this time it was the bridegroom. And he comes, and finally at midnight, there's this loud cry, "Behold the bridegroom! Come out to meet him." And you could just see this scene, like the 10 young girls, they're just like waking up going, "What's going on?" Oh, you know, and they're trying to trim their lamps and get their lamps going. And then to their horror, the foolish ones realized that they had left them burning and all the oil had run out. So they turn to the wise young women and they say, "Hey, give us some," I'm paraphrasing, but you can read it exactly on the screen. They say, "Hey, give us some of your oil, right? We're about to run out." And the other ones, the wise ones, say, "Hey, get your own oil. Right? You know, we thought ahead. We planned ahead. Get your own, go to the merchants and buy your own oil, or we all might run out." And it sounds a little selfish, but actually, the wise young women were worried that if they spread the oil too thin, the remaining oil too thin, that all the lamps would go out. And then it would be very embarrassing for the couple. So then, the foolish ones go off to buy the oil. And while they're gone, everyone who is ready goes with the bridegroom into the new home where the wedding banquet will be, and the doors are locked. And then the foolish girls come back, and guess what? They're locked out. They can't get in. So the obvious question you may be asking is, why? I mean, come on. They forgot some oil. They're going to be locked out for all eternity? Well, it wasn't because they forgot the oil. It's because they had a foolish character. They were locked out because they were foolish. The reason they forgot the oil is because they were foolish. Now, the thing about character that's important for us to understand is that it takes a long time to develop. Your character takes a long time to develop. You could think of it as kind of like adding up all your good deeds, adding up all your good decisions, adding up all your wise choices, and subtracting all your bad decisions, all your foolish choices, and all the bad things you've done, right? Those things kind of add up to your overall character at any point in time. And what Jesus is saying is we have to be ready whenever God calls us home to have a good character so that we can get into the wedding banquet. Now, most scholars, here's a little wrinkle. Most scholars think the oil represents good deeds, right? Good works. And now you're saying, well, wait a minute, Father, you just told us that you can't get into the wedding banquet just with your good deeds. That's not going to get you in. Well, what you have to understand is that the wise young women were wise because they had performed all these good deeds and all these things up to that point in their life. That's what made them wise. And the foolish young women were foolish because they hadn't done any of those things. That's what made them foolish. And so it wasn't about the oil. It wasn't about good deeds. It was about their character. In the same way, you and I cannot earn heaven by performing a bunch of good deeds. It doesn't matter how many elderly people you walk across the street. I learned that in Boy Scouts. You have to help the old ladies across the street. Do you remember? Anybody was a Boy Scout? You remember that? It was in the Boy Scout manual. Anyway, it doesn't matter how many elderly people you walk across the street. It doesn't matter how many cats you rescue or how many trees you plant or how many pints of blood you donate. All those are good and wonderful things, and you should do them. But those are the product, the result of your good character. They're not what gets you into heaven. It's character that determines where you go after you die, because it's character that determines whether you really want to be with God forever. The way to heaven is open. to all those who are ready for it, because through a long series of good and wise decisions, they have developed a good and wise character. And because they have that kind of character, they have a heart that longs for heaven. The more you and I acknowledge and accept the fact that we are going to die, the more we accept our mortality and recognize it, the more we will be willing to grow in character, to grow in goodness, and to prepare ourselves for eternity. That's why the Bible says, make us know the shortness of our lives so that we may gain wisdom of heart.